Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Get your advanced PhD in WOW from Floor and Decor. If you're a pro, you're already an expert in tile, wood, and stone. And with Floor and Decor's job site delivery, their free design services, and pro rewards that actually reward you, your business is set to grow from one client to the next. Floor and Decor isn't just a couple of aisles. It's an entire store designed to help your business boom. It's Floor and Decor.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Now, if you've read a lot of personal finance advice, you know that it usually concentrates on what you can't do, what you shouldn't buy, and how you shouldn't spend your money. What it doesn't often offer is a vision of what all that scrimping and saving is for. My guest today argues that while knowing how to save money is hugely important, it's also important to know how to spend it. His name is Ramit Sethi. He's the author of the book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich. It's out now as a revised second edition, 10 years after the publication of the original. We've begun a discussion going over what has and hasn't changed over the past decade when it comes to personal finance. Ramit then makes the case that living what he calls a quote-unquote rich life involves not only knowing where to cut back on spending, but where to increase it in places he calls money dials. We then get into some practical ways to better manage your money to ensure you spend it less in areas you don't care about and more in those you do, including how to manage and pay off credit card debt, the bank accounts you need and how to set them up so that your finances are automated, and why you need to start investing today. And we end our discussion on the idea that the big money decisions that many people ignore are more important than the small ones that get a lot of attention. After the show's over, check out the show notes at aom.is/richlife. Ramit joins me now via Skype. All right, Ramit Sethi, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back again.
So last time we had you on, we were discussing behavioral science and psychology and how that influences decisions we make and our finances and diet and exercise. Today, we're going to talk about your book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, because this thing, you originally published it 10 years ago and you've updated it and republished it with new insights you've gained in the past 10 years. I'm curious, what's changed since you originally published the book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, in the past 10 years? Like, is there stuff you've learned along the way since then?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot that has changed in the outside world, and there's a lot that's changed with me. I didn't expect to write an update of the book because when it comes to good advice, most good advice is timeless. And some of my favorite books were written 50 years or more ago. But when I finally took a look outside, I saw there were new accounts. I use different credit cards than I used 10 years ago. There are better perks that you can squeeze those credit card companies for. There are robo-advisors. There's crypto. There's movements like FIRE, Financial Independence Retire Early. And then also my life has changed. I got married, and as you can imagine, love and money, huge topic. My business also grew. So I've come to see money very differently than I saw when I first wrote the book. And you know, my favorite part of it was being able to share the stories of people who used the book. And in the last 10 years, you can see their lives have completely changed.
And the other thing that's changed, you make a note of this in the book, interest rates have changed.
Oh my God. Okay, this is probably the biggest mistake of my life. All right. I made a lot of mistakes, but you wouldn't believe, for the last 10 years, every single day of my life, I wake up and I have 10 or so emails from random people around the world cursing me out. This is like my morning coffee. I wake up, I open up my email, I get cursed out by people saying, your book told me there are 5% savings accounts. Where are they? You liar. And I'm like, oh, I used to write back, hey guys, are you aware that interest rates are variable? And also, even if you have $10,000, we're talking about a difference of about $4 a month. It turns out people really don't like to hear that from me. So now I have just stopped responding to those. My new lesson in life is never write interest rates in a book. Lesson learned.
But so you talked about, have these been changes in the larger world of personal finances and in your own life. But overall, I read the update, the fundamentals haven't really changed all that much.
That's right. If you think about investing, the compound interest still matters. Automating your money still matters. And knowing how to master your money psychology still matters. I learned that when I first wrote the book, I could give you the perfect automation technique. I mean, down to the list of accounts, down to the days that money should transfer. And I did that in chapter 5. But if you don't understand your own money psychology, then none of it matters. For example, think about how many of us grew up with our parents saying random offhand phrases like, money doesn't grow on trees, or we don't talk about money in this family. And we take those messages and 25 years later, 30 years later, they still affect us. They actually cause a lot of our purchasing decisions that we don't even realize. So that is something that has not changed, but I wanted to shine a light on it. But I would say that, you know, even though I added 80 new pages of material and I updated a bunch of stuff, good advice doesn't really change that often. And if you use the book 10 years ago or you use it now, you're going to be financially set.
Right. Well, another interesting thing that happens, you've had 10 years to interact with readers of your content. And I'm curious, during that time, you've laid out this stuff, the fundamentals, that they're strong. But I think something you've mentioned in the book and in on your website, that you still see people make the same money mistakes over and over and over again. Which ones are those? And what do you think is going, like, what's the underlying factor? Is it the psychology that's the problem?
Yeah. It's everybody knows the basic stuff of money. We all know that we should be saving more. We all know that we should somehow be investing. And, you know, these words are tossed around like 401ks and IRAs. But the biggest mistake is that people put it off until another day. And I actually completely understand why. If anything, in the last 10 years, I've become much more compassionate about people's attitudes and behaviors towards money. I mean, just think about it. You wake up in the morning, you go to work. Most people want to have a cup of coffee in the morning, go to work, not get in trouble, come back, maybe hang out with friends or family, have a nice meal, watch some Netflix, and go to sleep. That's a good day. And I get that. I respect that. When you think about opening up your bills and you think about learning all this word salad of annuities and 401ks, that makes people feel bad. And as one person told me, he said, I don't know exactly what I'm doing, but I know that I'm doing it wrong. And that's how a lot of people feel about money. So I get why they procrastinate. That's the first mistake. Another mistake, and this is a big one, is people telling themselves stories that are not true. So they'll tell themselves the story that I need to wait to have some money to invest, or only rich people invest. When in reality, it's actually the opposite. The way that you become rich is in part by investing. Another, you know, a lot of people, especially on social media these days, they love to victimize themselves. There's no way to get ahead. Oh my God, the student loan debt crisis. And while there are certainly some serious structural issues, I get that. I always come back to, okay, that's true. There is a crisis, a housing crisis, student debt crisis. But when was the last time you invested in your 401k? And if they say, there's no way I can even put aside 50 or 100 bucks, I say, give me 10 minutes with your calendar and 10 minutes with your spending. And I will show you your priorities and I will show you how you can make that money work. And then the third mistake is, and I hate to be blunt about this, but it's listening to losers for money advice. Like, I see people going on obscure subreddits and listening to commenter number 86483 telling them, oh my God, there's no way to get 8% returns. That's impossible. And why are you listening to a random anonymous commenter on Reddit? Many, in fact, I would say over 95% of the people who complain about money have never spent one weekend reading a good book about money. And so if your entire reality is people who don't have money telling you why you can't have money, perhaps it's time to make a change.
Yeah. And another problem that you mentioned is that people make the perfect the enemy of the good, right? They think everything's got to be in place, right? They got to have all their debt paid off and then they can start investing. Or they got to have the perfect investment plan before they start investing. But you're saying, like, no, you just need to get it 85% right. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. I call it the 85% solution, in fact. And it's funny because we kind of all intuitively know this with something that we started and we got good at. you know, people listening, maybe they decided to improve their style, or maybe they decided to improve their fitness. And looking back, there were so many things that were impossible to know when you got started. And like, I've gone on a fitness journey myself. And when I started, if someone had taught me about macros and calorie counting and all kinds of the, you know, overhead press, I would have been completely overwhelmed. I wasn't ready to learn that stuff. What I needed to do was show up at the gym and control what I ate. Very simple. Same thing with money. You need to automate your money, have some money go to savings, some money go to investing. You need to have the right accounts. And like, that's 85% of it. You're good. If you want to tweak it and go a little further, you can. I show you how in chapter 8. But most people will do very well with 85% solution.
Right. So just quit looking for the perfect thing. It's not going to, you're just going to prevent you from getting to where you need to go. Yeah. I mean, like I, you know, I talked about this before we got on the show. Like I read this book 10 years ago. And one of the advice you gave was like target funds, right? For investing. We can talk about this later on in a little detail. I mean, I didn't know much about investing. I needed to start a retirement account. I didn't know what to invest in. So I just did that. And it's been crazy to see like in the past 10 years, how well those target funds on Vanguard have done. And I haven't done anything. I haven't like, haven't had to rebalance. It's just, I put the money in and that's it.
So this is a crazy thing. First of all, I'm so happy to hear that. I love, love, love talking to people who took the advice, they automated it, and then they got on with their life. That's the beautiful part. Like you did not spend like hours and hours every single day tweaking and fiddling with it. That's not a rich life. Most people do not want to become financial experts. They want to set things up, move on, and live their rich life outside the spreadsheet, which is exactly what you've been doing. And that's amazing. I think that if you look at what happened with this book, it came out in March 2009. Now, I don't believe in market timing, but that was probably the best time could have ever come out because that was the absolute bottom of the recession. Now, if you just followed the advice in the book, even with conservative numbers, like $100 a month, you are basically financially set for life. And so I want everyone listening to really get honest with yourself. Take a look in the mirror and say, have I been delaying, you know, learning about a 401k? Have I been complaining about money, but not actually picking up a good book and reading it? The key thing about what you said, which I love, is most people in most parts of life want more control, right? They want to have control over their living environment, their work, their career, all that stuff. With money, it's ironic that the more you try to control every last bit, the less successful you're going to be. And in fact, we see this with portfolio managers, people who fiddle around actively investing. They actually fail to beat the market over 80% of the time. And what you can see is all you need to do is automatically set money aside, pick a simple investment, and then get on with your life. And you will outperform over 80% of professional investors.
So you just mentioned something there. You mentioned this idea of a rich life. And that's a new concept too you've been developing over the past 10 years. Because I don't think you talked about that in the first book or the first edition of the book. But this idea of, of a rich life. And when people hear that, they think, oh, it's private jet, mansion. But that's not what you're talking about. What is a rich life for you?
Okay, so this is definitely the crux of what makes this book different from so many other books, and also my philosophy. So my philosophy is that each person's rich life is their own. So your rich life is different than mine. And in fact, let's kind of just get into it right here. So if I asked you, what's your rich life, what would you say?
Being able to buy books whenever I want, barbell train, you know, maybe occasionally buy some things from my garage gym. And spending time with my family and maybe taking a vacation to Vermont once a year. That's it.
Love it. Okay, love it. Now, let me ask you this. Out of the things you talked about, what is the thing you absolutely love spending money on? I don't mean like, I mean love.
Going to Vermont. I'm here right now talking to you in Vermont.
Perfect. This could not be a better example. Okay, now let me ask you this. What if you took the amount that you spend on that and you quadrupled it? What would that look like? What would that feel like? What would that be?
I have no clue. I'm gonna have to think about that. I'm gonna have to get my journal, maybe journal about it. Quadruple, like so the amount I spent on going to Vermont, if I quadrupled that, I would probably buy a second home in Vermont and like come here all the time.
Nice. And what would that feel like?
Just feel great. I love it here. It's I can relax. The nature's fantastic. The outdoors are fantastic.
You probably have your stuff there. so you wouldn't have to transport it, right? You'd travel lighter. You'd have something to look forward to. What about memories with your family? Maybe you'd even bring friends. Extend that.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I would do all those things.
Love it. Okay, so this is a concept I call money dials. And money dials are part of your rich life. Everyone's got at least one money dial. A money dial is something that you absolutely love spending on. Everyone intuitively knows what it is. And I call it a money dial because you can turn that, almost like a radio dial, you can turn that dial way, way up. Now, the most common money dials that people tell me are travel, eating out, and to some extent, well, let me just stop there. Those are the two most common ones. Mine is a little different. Mine is convenience. I love convenience. It makes me happy. I wake up in the morning. My calendar is perfect. My food is like already. Everything is convenient. I love it. Now, what I challenge people to do, I ask them, what does it look like if you quadruple your spending? And what is amazing is most people have never thought about it. Just like you said, I'm going to have to think about it. And when they do, they start, they give pretty generic answers. So I had one woman in LA and she said to me, I love buying clothes. I love it. And I encouraged her. I said, good, tell me more. What do you love about them? She's like, I love coming home to my apartment. There's boxes. And I said, cool. You open them up. It's like a gift. I said, what if you could quadruple your spending? She's like, I would have boxes everywhere.
All the boxes.
And the whole crowd was just loving it. And I said to her, where do you shop? And she said a store called Topshop. And I said, if you quadrupled your spending, where would you shop? She said, she looked confused. She said, I would shop at Topshop. And this is where it became very interesting. Most people have never thought about spending more on the things they love because most people and most topics about money are all about what you can't do. No, you can't buy lattes. No, you can't go out. No, you can't go on vacation. You have to hoard it all until you're 90. So I always start from a place of what do you love and what if you could spend more on it? And I challenged her to get specific, to dream bigger. If you quadruple your spending, you're not just going to buy more of the same clothes. You might actually turn that dial way up and you might shop at a different brand, or you might fly to a headquarters and factory of a brand you love and take a behind the scenes tour and even get something custom created for yourself. So I share this example because you love Vermont. If you quadrupled or 5X or 10X your spending, it's not just adding a little bit more. You can actually completely change the entire experience. And I always say, spend extravagantly on the things you love as long as you cut costs mercilessly on the things you don't. This is a totally different way of looking at money than most people who only focus on the things you can't do.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because most personal finance advice, like, this is something you've been railing against for the past 10 years. Like, skip the latte. If you skip the latte, your retirement will be set. And it's like, well, but you're missing out on that latte. You enjoy it. It's a part of your routine. It gives you pleasure. It gives you joy. Money's there to like also enjoy life as well.
It's there to be spent and it's there to be used. You know, I grew up in a middle-class family, pretty large family. And one thing I learned is I love strawberries. But when we got strawberries, I would always try to save them because like I like them and I wanted to extend the pleasure. But inevitably, they would go bad or they would get eaten. And so I have a new philosophy, which is strawberries are meant to be eaten. And money is meant to serve your rich life. So you notice that most of the advice out there that tells you what you can't do, it never really ends up telling you what you can do. So it's interesting. This has really bled into people's psychology, especially in America. I ask them, what's your rich life? And so many people say, I just want to pay off my debt. That's as far as they've dreamed. And I said, man, it's no surprise you're not living a rich life. If your entire dream is to pay off your debt, that doesn't get anybody up in the morning. That doesn't get you excited. But what if you said, I want to pay off my debt and then I want to take my family on an amazing vacation once a year? Or I want to donate more to charity, or I want to go out and eat at a beautiful restaurant on our anniversary every quarter. That suddenly becomes something that gets people excited. So money can be about saying yes, not just about saying no.
Right. And I like this idea of conscious spending. This doesn't mean you're going to be a total spendthrift, right? Where you're just going to spend all your money all the time. Like you said, you have to decide what you really want and you put your money towards that. And then the stuff that you don't really care about, like dial that down, like be a monk yes. if you have to get that thing that really cranks up that money dial for you.
Yes. So let's talk about that, because I don't want people to think that I'm just telling everyone go out and buy private jets. I have no interest in that. And let me share a little bit about what I don't spend on. And then I'd love to hear from you also, what do you not care about spending on? So for me, I rent on purpose. That's a very counterintuitive notion. A lot of people believe that, oh my God, buying a house is the best investment and you're just throwing money away on rent. That is not true. I live in Manhattan. I've rented in the same place for the last 10 years, even though my net worth has increased a lot. So that's a choice. I'm happy in my apartment. I don't need another place. Another thing, I don't have a TV. It's not important to me. So those are a couple of areas where, and I have the same computer for the last 7 years, MacBook Air. Simple. It runs. It might be a little loud, but it works. And those are things where I'm like, yeah, it's good enough. I don't need to spend more. On the other hand, I love convenience and I love to travel to really, really nice locations and hotels. So I will spend a lot on that guilt-free. That's my conscious spending. What about yours?
So I don't care much for cars. Like doesn't get me going. Like I could drive. We have like an 11-year-old. No, it's how old is it? It's a 2007 Honda Element.
Love it.
It's got almost 200,000 miles on it, and I'm gonna ride that thing to the ground. And it's pretty dorky looking. I'm not a big, but you know, it drives, gets you going where you need to go. So yep. That food, I'm not a foodie. Like I have a garbage gut. If you just give me food and it has calories and carbohydrates and protein and fat, it's fine. So I don't spend a lot of money on food. Like movies, going out to movies doesn't interest me. So those are, I don't spend money on that. So yeah, most of my money goes towards books and then, you know, saving up for a Vermont trip. And then that's pretty much it.
See, I love this. I love this concept of spending extravagantly on the things you love and cutting costs mercilessly on the things you don't. Because when you think of how most people spend money, it's interesting, actually. First of all, notice that in America, everybody tells you how to save, but nobody teaches you how to spend. Think about that. And so where do we pick up our spending lessons from? We pick it up from Instagram, which tells us to just spend on stuff to keep up with other people, even though we may not even like it. We learn to spend from our parents and the people around us who probably have different values than we do. And what I recommend for people is really think about your own values. Like you might have heard me say, I don't particularly care for the apartment that moving apartments, or you say, you know, you don't care about cars. You might recoil at that and say, I love cars. And my answer to that is awesome. Then you should spend more on a car. But you also have to be honest with yourself about what you don't care about. And this takes a higher level of reflection than just spending a little bit here and a little bit there and getting to the end of the month, looking at your bills and shrugging and saying, I guess I spent that.
I like that a lot. And it could be different for every person. So maybe someone doesn't even have a house or an apartment and they live in a van and they go camping all the time.
Yeah. That sounds like hell. That sounds like hell to me, by the way. But I respect it. Like we all have our own things. One guy in my book, he's right at the front. He said that he used my book and he got it 10 years ago. He and his wife retired in their mid-30s. And they travel around the country in an RV. And I was like, I would rather be dead than travel in an RV around the country. But I love that that's his rich life and that he and his wife together dialed it in and created their own rich life. And they are unapologetic about it. Our rich lives can all be different. It's just about you deciding what yours is and not letting anyone in society tell you that you should feel guilty about it.
Right. And a rich life can be not just about spending more on material things, but the kind of lifestyle you want. So maybe you're willing to way downsize your house so you can be a high school football coach instead of a lawyer.
You know, it's so interesting. If you ask people right now, what do you truly want? What is your rich life? I would challenge the listeners. As I said, one comment that I get, there's three answers that I always get. One is, I want to pay off my debt. We already talked about that. The second one is this word, freedom. It sounds logical, but it's actually really vague. I say, okay, freedom, what does that mean to you? And then they look at me with their eyes glassed over. They've never actually thought about what that means. So freedom, what is it? Does it mean you don't have to go into an office? Does it mean that you don't have a commute? Does it mean that, you know, you're working 3 months a year from somewhere else or you're not working at all? What does it mean? That's why I pushed you on the Vermont question. I want people to be ultra specific. My answer when I first moved to New York was, I want to be able to buy appetizers. That's my rich life. Because growing up, we could never afford it. And then as I kind of got a little bit more successful, I wanted to be able to take a taxi if I had a meeting in the middle of summer instead of going on the sweaty subway. Now my dreams are a lot bigger, but that's the level of specificity I want for people to have. I don't want words like freedom. The third answer, by the way, they give me is, I want to have $1 million. And of course, that number is totally arbitrary. Depends if you live in Kansas, Manhattan, et cetera. Right. But what I want people to do is get as specific as saying, I want to buy appetizers without ever looking at the price. And whatever that is for you, that is the level of specificity that will help you create your rich life.
Oh, I just thought of another thing I like to spend money on. Entertaining. My wife and I love inviting people to our homes, feeding them.
Love it.
Talking. I enjoy it. Love it. And it's not that like, it's not like we're like, it's sometimes pizza, but I want to be able to buy pizza and not have to worry about it.
I love that.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now, and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code manliness to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code manliness. Check it out today. If you're like me, you've probably signed up for subscription services, but then you forgot about them. I'm talking about newsletters, streaming services, things like that. Well, with the personal finance app Rocket Money, it can help you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It can also monitor your spending and help you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I had a chance to use Rocket Money, connected it to my checking account, and it found a bunch of subscription services that I forgot about. I was able to cancel them, and I was able to save a lot of money because the stuff adds up. Besides canceling your unwanted subscriptions, Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you, up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness, rocketmoney.com/manliness. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, M-A-N-L-I-N-E-S-S. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, picture that thing you've always wanted to learn. Now picture learning it from the person who's literally the best at it in the world. That's what you get with Masterclass. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. So for example, you can learn The Art of Negotiation from Chris Voss. We had him on the podcast. Leadership from Jocko Willink, another AOM podcast guest. Writing from Malcolm Gladwell, another AOM podcast guest. You name it, Masterclass has it. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. So I did the masterclass with Chris Voss on negotiation. Very well done. He talks about tactical empathy, how to mirror somebody so that you can develop rapport with them. So if you enjoyed that podcast I did with Chris Voss several years ago about his book, Never Split the Difference, you're going to love this masterclass. And right now, AOM listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. masterclass.com/AOM. Check out the negotiation class with Chris Voss. And now back to the show.
Right. All right. So we've been talking big picture. Let's get down into some brass tacks things. So in the first section of your book, I was surprised by this when I first read it initially, and then it's still there. The first section of the book is about optimizing credit cards. Uh-huh. It's not developing a savings plan. It's not developing a retirement account. You start with credit cards. Why start there? What's the point there?
It's very intentional because it's everything in that book is done for a reason. The book, I wanted to create a psychology book disguised as a personal finance book, because ultimately deep down when it comes to money, one of the most influential things is your own personal psychology. I can show you all the math, but the truth is people already know the math. They know they should be saving and investing more. When you pick up any other money book, do you know what the first chapter always tells you to do?
Cut back on spending.
Cut back on spending. And they even start a little bit before that, which is, let's figure out how much you spent last year. And people look at it and they go, well, I don't know what I spent, but I know it was bad. I think I'm going to put this book back on the shelf. Nobody wants to start from a place of feeling bad. And also, nobody wants to start with these questions that are too big, like, what is your rich life? That's really hard in chapter one. Or let's create a retirement plan. Well, I'd rather not. I'd rather just go out and hang with my friends today. But when it comes to our money, we all have credit cards. We all hate our credit cards. And we can all get amazing perks that none of us even know when it comes to our credit cards. So I started off there. And what I did was, a lot of people have pay these late fees or credit card fees or annual fees. And I said, let me show you guys something. First of all, here are the phone numbers. This is the level of specificity that I get to. Here's the phone numbers. Here's the words to read off the page when you call your credit card company. And suddenly people are like, I don't believe this thing's going to work. This weird Indian guy, I don't know. Boom, they get their $37 fee waived. Or they discover that they have perks that are going to pay them back for $1,000 computer repair, which happened to me. And suddenly they're like, oh my God, this actually works. And for the first time, instead of being passengers in their financial life, they're like, I can actually take control of this. So when they take control of a $37 fee or some perks on their credit card that I show them, suddenly by the time I take them to chapter 9 and I show you how to negotiate a $25,000 raise at work, they're a believer. They know that this stuff works. But if I put that in chapter 1, there's no way. People are not ready for that. So that's why I designed the book the way I did.
So yeah, you're getting those small wins first to build up that sense of agency and autonomy,
yep,
which will allow you to tackle bigger things because you know you have the capacity to do that stuff.
It's just like training. It's just like any sort of skill building, but you need an instructor who's very intentional about it. Otherwise, I just give you a bunch of information and charts and you look at it and you feel bad and you move on. And I would bet for a lot of people listening, that's happened. You know, we've read a blog post that made us feel guilty about not saving more. The difference and the reason that there are so many I Will Teach You to Be Rich success stories is that the book is created with psychology first. And if you get that right, then you know people are going to have a very successful journey.
Well, another thing about the psychology of starting with credit cards, paying off your credit card debt, that's a big win.
It's a big win.
A big one, because like you imagine all the interest people are paying by just paying the minimum payment on their credit card. Once you pay that off, like you free up a lot more cash that can start going towards things you actually want to spend your money on.
Yeah. It's funny. One of the common objections is, you know, I don't have the kind of money to be able to invest every month. Like, and it could be some people say I don't have $100 a month. Some people I say I don't have $1,000 a month. Whatever the number may be for you. The truth is that if you had a third party come in and take a look at your spending, not making you feel bad, but just saying, hey, here's three scenarios. You can choose. If you like eating out, great. Keep eating out. In fact, spend more on eating out. Great. But here's a couple areas that you seem to just be spending a little bit. And is this really important to you? And just that consciousness of saying, man, I didn't realize that it all adds up to this much. I could take that cash and redirect it to something else, whether that be credit card debt, saving, investing, or even just spending it on something you actually love. That is very empowering to people. And so that's why I always start from a place of yes, and what do you love? And then we figure out what you don't actually like.
And another interesting thing about your approach to credit cards, you know, a lot of personal finance people out there will say, okay, pay off your credit cards as soon as possible. And you'd say, yeah, I'd agree with that. Get rid of those interest rates, whatever. But then the personal finance people would say, and then cut up your credit cards. Don't ever use your credit card again. You take a more moderated approach to that.
Yeah. I mean, look, we all live in the real world. So one of the reasons that most personal finance advice doesn't work, and we know that just by looking at the ballooning amount of Americans' debt, their poor financial literacy scores, is that the advice takes a very impractical approach. They tell people don't use credit cards at all. That's pretty unrealistic for most people. And what I say is like, let me actually show you all the amazing perks and benefits that your credit cards give you. So I show people the exact credit cards that I use and the exact system. When do I use a cashback card? When do I use a travel rewards card? And how do I upgrade them for free flights and free hotel, luxury hotel stays? And I show some stories of readers as well who paid for their entire honeymoon in the Maldives and Bora Bora. Like, these are tools that you can use, and you can squeeze these companies to get massive perks, but you got to understand how they work. And so I show you how to beat them instead of just abandoning them.
Right. And you, and to reiterate the point here, like, people are using these credit cards, but they're paying them off at the end of the month before they get charged any interest.
Oh yeah, you should not be carrying debt. And if you are, I show you how to build a plan, but you should, I pay off my credit cards 100% every time. And in exchange, I get massive, massive perks throughout the year.
Right. And also, it can help you manage your finances. You can see where you're, a lot of these credit card companies, they'll like break down like how you're spending your money on like gas or health insurance or whatever. It's all, you get a nice financial report.
Yeah, it's all done for you, and it's just convenient. So I've actually, since the book came out the first time, I used to use cash a lot more, and I actually use cash far less. And the tracking and benefits of the credit cards are amazing, as well as the perks. Now, there's even better perks than there were 10 years ago. However, and I just want to say this just to be really upfront, you need to understand how credit works, and you need to understand that paying the minimum or late fees, those things can really, really disproportionately hurt you. So I teach you how to use it and how to use it effectively, but I don't believe in just saying, don't use it at all.
Right. Well, the next section of your book is about bank accounts, which is like incredibly basic, because I think a lot of people, well, not a lot, you'd be surprised the number of unbanked Americans there are. But if you came like in a middle, grew up in a middle-class family, you probably got a bank account when you were like 10.
Yep.
Right. That little savers club you joined. But you go into more detail that people aren't optimizing their accounts that will help make their money life easier. What are people messing up there?
Well, number one, they still, like, people are so funny. They have loyalty to a bank account that they opened when they were 8 years old. And I'm like, why do you, is it okay if I name names on this recording?
Go ahead.
Oh, thank God.
Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. I might get bleeped out, guys, but I'm just going to tell you the best accounts. Okay. No need to hold you in suspense. First of all, I hate Wells Fargo and Bank of America. And I tell you exactly why. You know, they've done predatory, borderline, I mean, they've done some really bad stuff to my readers and to general Americans. And so I ask people who have these accounts, why do you have them? And they're like, well, I opened it up with my mom when I was 8. I'm like, in what other part of life would you be loyal to a multi-billion dollar company that's trying to screw you? And I'm personally offended at what these companies do, and also what some of the investing companies do. That's why I wrote this book, so people could actually be empowered against these companies that are very sophisticated. What people are resistant because they're like, oh, it's going to be a hassle. I got my bills. It's true. I get it. It's going to take, you know, a few hours to fix, but it's kind of like choosing the right email software to use, right? You can sit there and use your own software, or you can use Gmail, and it's probably going to be great, right? So I believe, you know, I tell people I use Schwab for investor checking, and I can take money out from any ATM and it gets refunded. And they do all these amazing things. I say the same for investing accounts. I name names about good and bad. And I'll tell you why I do that. Number one, I want people to know the specifics of money. When I was starting to research money, I was frustrated because everyone would give these broad generalities. Find a bank you trust. They should be open 24/7. I'm like, just tell me what to use. And so if you listen to me and you trust me, then you know that I love researching this stuff. And most people are like, all right, this guy knows what he's talking about. I'm just going to go with his recommendations. So that's number one. And number two, I want people to be more specific with every part of their money, with when they tell me what their rich life is, with how much money they're putting in, with the accounts they use. You read this book and there are no questions left. You know exact the accounts, exact amounts, exact days. That's why I got specific about checking accounts, savings accounts, and investing accounts.
And another thing you point out, yeah, like people, they open up a checking account, they open up a savings account, but they don't have a purpose for them. They just kind of like haphazardly like funnel money into each one. But you develop a system like, okay, your checking account is your workhorse account. That's kind of money comes in and then it's going to immediately go out to these different funnels automatically.
Yeah.
Might go to your savings account is for a specific reason. It could be an emergency fund, or it could be you're saving up for a down payment on a home or your wedding. Like, you have to give every dollar a job.
Yeah.
Basically.
So I love systems. So let me talk a little bit about my own system, and I show you how to do this, and then you can adapt it for your own needs. So for me, my checking account is like my email inbox. My paycheck goes there, everything goes there, and then it's automatically filtered out to different accounts. It's filtered out to multiple sub-savings accounts. So I have multiple things that I save up for. And for a lot of people, you might be saving up for a wedding, a down payment. I actually encourage you to pick something you and maybe your partner want to do this year. Maybe you want to take a trip. Okay, let's actually think about what would make this trip extra special. You know, maybe we want to go to this really hard to get into restaurant or take this behind the scenes food tour. My wife and I love doing food tours. And so you start to save. And if you save over 12 months, the amount you have to save on a monthly basis is often quite manageable. So I typically have about 4 to 6 sub-savings accounts at any given time. I also have money going from my email inbox / checking account to my investing account. And that money goes in there and is automatically invested. So I spend less than 60 minutes a month on my money, and it all just flows. It's like a beautiful ballet. I know I sound like a psycho, but I told you my convenience is my money dial. And so I love systems that make my life more convenient. That's how it works. And so I would encourage everyone here to think about the 4 or 5 or 6 sub-savings accounts you have. And suddenly your money goes from just this random pool into areas that you know, you love, and you can track. That is very empowering.
No, yeah. Like I said before the show, I was talking about when I read the book initially, you know, 10 years ago, 2009, like I set up my system, you know, sort of like how you recommended. And it's basically stayed the same.
Yes.
I've made tweaks along the way as I've learned more and as my situation has changed, but the general framework is still there and it works. I don't have to really think much about it.
I love it. And I love that. I love that your rich life is not sitting in Excel and logging into accounts. It shouldn't be. I talk a lot about how a rich life is lived outside the spreadsheet. And this may be true for a lot of people, particularly people who are in the FIRE community, financial independence, retire early. This is a whole new culture that has emerged, and it's pretty amazing. FIRE basically encourages people to save well over the recommended 10 or 20%. They kind of laughed and said, how about 70%? And so it's an incredible community that has basically taken these assumptions and just shattered them. But what you also find is that in the FIRE community, there's a lot of people who they use words like, I feel anxious about money. I feel nervous. I want to escape from my job. These are not the words of someone who is financially healthy, right? I want people to use money for positive words. I want to travel with my family, or I want to experience XYZ, or I want to eat out, or I want to buy a beautiful leather jacket, whatever it is you want. With FIRE, you will sometimes find deep FIRE adherents who really live in this spreadsheet. And they every day they wake up and run another Monte Carlo simulation. And that is not what I encourage people to do. At a certain point, your system works. It's all it needs is time and discipline. And guess what? You earned the right to live outside the spreadsheet.
It sounds like when you were talking, describing that, it sounds like an eating disorder, right? Like,
it's funny you say that.
People who like just track their calories like obsessively, and to the point where it gets in the way of life. Like a psychologist say, you need help, you need therapy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very interesting analogy. I want money to be a healthy, positive part of people's life. When in reality, if you ask people, what's the first word that comes to mind when you think about money? They will always tell me the same five or six answers. Anxiety, nervous, is it too late, embarrassed, shame, guilt. These are the most common answers. And what I want people to do is go from what I call hot to cool. Hot are those words that are emotionally hot, you know, shame, embarrassed, guilty. Cool are things like decided. I decided to go to Thailand this year, right? I decided that I want to hire a personal trainer. I decided that I don't really feel like buying a TV because it's not important to me. Those are cool words, decided. Words that you consciously choose as opposed to guilt, shame, and embarrassment.
Yeah, going back to this analogy of food, like, so I count macros, but like, I try not to let it like ruin my life. I mean, here's an example, like I'm on vacation right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great restaurants around town. And so I'm not counting macros so much. I'm making sure I get enough protein, enough fiber. And then I kind of just leave. It's just sort of free reign because I want to be able to enjoy pizza and Ben and Jerry's ice cream with not having to worry, oh, what is this going over my car? Like, I don't care. Like, I would just ruin it. So I use sort of a basic structure, but I don't obsess about it. And I think you can apply the same thing to your money as well.
Totally. Totally. So you have reached a level of expertise and sophistication where you track, but you also know how to let loose sensibly. Right. And it's like we went on, we track as well. My wife and I, we track our macros, and we went on a very long honeymoon, 6 weeks. And, you know, I was a bit overambitious. I was like, let's just try to work out 3 times a week. That'll be good. And then, you know, you're in the middle of Kenya for parts of it and there's no gym. And so we're like, you know what? Fine. We did work on getting our protein in, but at a certain point, we're sitting with some of the best food in the world in front of us. And we're like, you know what? We're going to enjoy this because we have the confidence to know that when we get back, we're going to hit the gym, we're going to count, and we're going to be back in shape, just like it'll take. And it took us about 3 weeks. So I think that getting to that level where you can actually be happy, you can actually feel in control, but you can also know that it's okay to let loose once in a while. And nothing crazy is going to happen because you have the confidence in yourself to get back, get to work, and just go back to your old routine. That is a real joyous feeling, whether it's macros or money.
Right. Well, let's talk about another specific thing that's troubling a lot of younger people, maybe not even young people anymore. You might be people in their 30s and their 40s still dealing with this, and that's student loans. What's your take on that? I'm sure that you have a lot of readers asking about that. Like, should they pay off their student loans before they start investing? Should they, you know, invest and then, you know, pay off their student loans at the same time? What's your take?
My short answer on this one is that if you have student loans, you should create a plan. And the way to know if you have effectively created a plan is you should be able to answer this one single question. What is your debt payoff date? And what that means is you should be able to say to me, well, Ramit, my debt payoff date is February 2022 or whatever the month and year is. By knowing your exact payoff date, that is the culmination of you knowing, first of all, how much you owe. Most people don't. Second of all, putting a plan into place with automatic repayments. Most people don't do that. And the third is knowing exactly when your debt will be paid off using a debt payoff calculator. And almost nobody does that. So if you can tell me the answer to that question, you're doing great. And it doesn't matter. It might take you 3 years. Some people, it might take them 10 plus years. I will encourage people to invest at the same time. Why? Because one, and this is mostly psychological, although there's mathematical too. Psychologically, it's important for you to build the muscle of investing, even $50 or $100 a month. Now, yes, the mathematical side says you need to count your interest rates and, you know, you might be able to get a better return by paying off a high interest loan. You can read all of that stuff in that chapter in the book. My point is, most people don't realize that you can do both. And so when people often say, should I do X or Y? A lot of times my answer is yes and yes. And so I would encourage people to build the muscle of investing, because as soon as you pay that debt off, you're going to see how powerful investments are. Just like you did from using my book 10 years ago, you see how much that money has grown. It's massive. No, yeah. And when people see that, they're like, oh my God, I can continue growing my money.
Yeah. And so it's talking about investing. So that's another thing. Like, there's so much confusion out there about investments because people think it's about picking stocks.
Yeah, it's not.
That's what they think investing. And it's not, because if you think about it that way, you're going to get overwhelmed immediately. Instead, you advocate just go for like good enough. And for most people, like a target index fund from Vanguard is good enough. And, you know, you can go on the forums and they'll say, well, you know, you're missing out on, you know, some interest or some growth there. But it's like, at the end of the day, is it going to make a huge, huge difference? Probably not.
Yeah. Investing is one of those areas that is, there are so many bad parties involved in investing, people who want to make money off of you, that you literally do not know who to trust. So you have people telling you that, like, there's a billboard right outside in New York City here saying, be better than average. And in most of life, that makes sense. You do want to be better than average at your fitness and be better than average at your relationship. But in investing, average is perfect. And most people believe that if they are in control, if they take more time and read all these PE ratios, they'll be better. No, you will fail. You will not be good. Trust me. I know this, and so does all the data that I cite in the book. So the simplest thing you can do is pick a target date fund, and I talk about how to identify them. They're really low cost, and all you need to do is automate your money from your checking account straight there every month. You never see it. It just goes away into the investment account. You can track it every month, or I recommend 6 months, and that's it. The best use of your time now is to, number one, focus on earning more and funneling more in there, because it'll grow. And number two, just get on with your rich life. You want to go out to eat at a restaurant? Go ahead. You already solved one of the biggest financial opportunities you have in your life, and that is automatically investing.
Right. And that's the thing, the big message from your book is, if you take care of these basics, getting your credit card debts pay off, managing your credit cards, getting these accounts set up that are automated, and just investing, even if it's like $100 a month.
Yep.
Like, you got 85% there, you have some wiggle room. It's like going back to the macros. Like, if you get basically your fiber and your protein and, you know, some, you know, basics, you've got wiggle room, and it's not going to destroy you if you enjoy yourself, or even if you slip up a bit.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I call them the big wins. And, you know, what most people are preoccupied in life with is minutia. You know, oh my God, should I buy this sweater? And, oh, I don't know, should I spring for the extra large Coke? It's like, you're asking $3 questions. You really should be asking $30,000 questions. And $30,000 or $300,000 questions are ones like, have I automatically invested every single month, right? Have I picked a great job and negotiated my salary? Is my credit good? Have I chosen a philosophy on what percentage I want to save and invest every month? That choice, in fact, it would be much more valuable for every single person listening to increase their savings rate by 1% per year, just 1%, than to worry about ever buying a latte again. That 1% would be worth tens of thousands of dollars to you over your lifetime, and you only have to decide it once per year, as opposed to making a decision 365 times a year for a $3 expense.
No, that idea of people getting focused on minutia. A lot of people, they don't understand with personal finances. They either miss the big question or the big issue. So they latch on to those little small things about that don't really make much of a difference.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I have a lot of compassion, because most people are surrounded by other people who are minutia focused. So like the people listening, let me ask you, you know, have you ever had maybe your friends or your parents or family say, wow, that must be nice, or I sure wish I could afford that, or, oh, why would you waste money on that? These are all words that people use to judge and influence you, but you always have to ask yourself, why would I take advice from this person? And if you are taking advice from someone who's not in a financial position that you want to be in, then you really need to question that advice. And I get this all the time from my readers. They're like, oh my, I have people who are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, primarily 35 plus. And so sometimes it's their parents, or it's their in-laws or wife or husband, and they're getting judged for a question. But I just ask them one question. Is this person in a financial position you want to be in? And they're like, no, oh, I get it. I shouldn't listen to them. Exactly. Find people who you admire, who live the kind of rich life that you aspire to, and then think about what you can do that aligns with your own values. Don't listen to randos who tell you you shouldn't, you know, splurge for an extra large.
This has been a great conversation. There's so much more we can talk about. And as you said in the book, there's a lot of specifics. Where can people go to learn more about the book and the rest of your work?
Okay, so thank you. And this has been awesome. The name of the book is I Will Teach You to Be Rich. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or at any bookstore. You can follow me at iwillteachyoutobe.rich.com. I've got a newsletter with several hundred thousand subscribers. And you can follow me on Instagram at Ramit and on Twitter at Ramit as well.
Awesome. Ramit Sethi, thanks so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. This was awesome.
My guest today was Ramit Sethi. He's the author of the book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich. It's available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. You can also find out more information about his work at his website, iwillteachyoutobe.rich.com. Also, check out our show notes at aom.is/richlife, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the AOM Podcast. Check out our website at artofmanliness.com, where you can find our podcast archives, as well as thousands of articles we've written over the years about personal finance, how to be a better husband, better father, physical fitness. Also, if you'd like to enjoy ad-free episodes of the Art of Manliness podcast, you can do so on Stitcher Premium. Head over to stitcherpremium.com, use code manliness to get a free month trial. Once you're signed up, download the Stitcher app on Android or iOS, and you can start enjoying ad-free episodes of the Art of Manliness podcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, you've gotten something out of it, I'd appreciate it if you take 1 minute to give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It helps out a lot. And if you've done that already, thank you. Please consider sharing the show with a friend or family member who you think would get something out of it. As always, thank you for the continued support. Until next time, this is Brett McKay, reminding you not only listen to the AOM podcast, but put what you've heard into action.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.